HWR HQ is the 292nd edition of Houston Wrestling Radio.
This is Abel.
This is Arnold.
No, you're Chris. You're Chris.
No.
What do you mean, no?
I'm Arnold.
You'd rather be Arnold?
Yeah, sure.
What does Arnold have that Chris doesn't?
Bald spot. A closet full of black clothes.
Happy 4th of July, everybody.
Happy Rusev Day!
Thank you for joining us. If you are joining us right now, we're a little bit early. You know, we usually go at 8 o'clock Central Standard Time, but we decided to go on today at 3 because, well, it's 4th of July, and there's going to be boom, boom, pow, pow going around outside, I would imagine. And, you know, you got stuff to do. You just moved?
Oh, God. Fuck.
I remembered
why I stayed at my apartment in the ghetto for 3 years because I hated the idea of moving.
Ah.
But it was fun. It was quick. Did you ever watch Lord of War?
No.
With Nick Cage? There's a scene in there where he's a gun runner and he gets caught. So they have to land the plane at the nearest airport, but he winds up landing it in the middle of Sierra Leone.
Okay.
And in 10 minutes, the people emptied out the entire plane. There was a part during the move where I was like, you know what? This stuff I don't want to take. I don't want to carry it. I'm lazy. So I just told my neighbors, hey, anything that's in here, if y'all want it, take it. And in 3 minutes, they wiped out the rest of this place. They made it easy for me to get out. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Made it very easy. So right now I'm in like the Tetris mode. I have a whole bunch of boxes in my apartment. I'm trying to unpack stuff and move other stuff around to make it comfortable enough for women to come over so that I can have my way with them. That's why we all do it, right? Yeah. And then I got rear-ended.
Ooh! So it worked.
I got rear-ended trying to finalize my deal at the apartment complex, so my little IQ got totaled.
Aww.
Yeah. But I got my new car coming in the mail in 2 weeks.
Hooray! So. Well, wait. Wait, back up. What? Your car's coming in the mail?
Yes. I got it from a CarMax in Pennsylvania, so they're mailing it to me.
What'd you get?
2015 release series Scion FRS.
Color?
Solar yellow.
Hell yeah.
Body kit, strut, sways, all TRD, spoiler, exhaust, everything. I don't got to add shit. All I got to do is get in it, turn on the key, and go.
Nice. Awesome. That's cool, man. Thank you.
Solved that for about six.
Why did I say thank you?
Yeah. I had it for like 6 to 9 months before some other dumbass Mexican in the neighborhood tolls that car too.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Then I'll just buy a fucking tank. Houston within shitty drivers and floods.
Floods. You need a tank. Yeah. So again, we're a little bit early because 4th of July. So if you're catching us right now, that's awesome. If you want to interact with us, you can. Just log into your YouTube or Google account. Then you could chat along with us in the live chat. So basically tell us hi, ask us questions, talk shit, fact check us, whatever. I'll try to see it right here on the old handy dandy smartphone. And I'll try to include you as best as I can in the show. Now, if you're not watching us live, again, we're like 5 hours
this
early.
This week, it's okay. Yeah, usually, me and Arnold flip the bird and do derogatory shit and grab our junk.
Yeah.
So this time,
it's understandable. Of course, it's understandable every time.
But wait a minute.
You're raining. An asshole.
It's raining, though, so they can't really go anywhere. So they have no other option but to watch the show. True. So they should be watching right now anyway. So, yeah.
So you're not watching us live. It's okay. You can still interact with us on Facebook, facebook.com/HoustonWrestlingRadio, or on Twitter at @HWrestlingRadio, or on Instagram, Houston Wrestling Radio, or just leave a comment right here down below. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button and click the little bell. That way you know when we go live in case we do shit like this where we go early because it's a holiday or what have you. So,
or if we have any extra special episodes coming on the pike later on, you'll be the first to know.
Exactly. So,
and if you can't stand to see us, we're also on iTunes. I'm an episode behind because of the move, but I'll catch y'all up before the end of the week.
Yes.
So,
Porsche in the live chat, also in the room next door. welcome. Thank you for joining us in the live chat.
Babysitting.
That's a kind of kind of cheating. But, yeah. You know, hey, we got somebody in the live chat. So the live chat is still live. She says, will Rusev be in this motherfucking tank that you get?
Maybe Lana.
Woo!
Lana
is the best. Lana's number one. All right. What do we want to start with? Let's get down to
the You already got me aroused. So I'm going to stick to the theme of women. What do you think of the push for Lacey Evans in NXT right now with that gimmicked women's right hand punch?
I talked about this, I think, with Arnold. I don't think you were on this episode when I was complaining about it. I don't like the fact that her finisher is just a right hand. Like, I get the pun, the women's right. Okay, that's cute. You know, that's cool. And, like, it works for the Big Show because he's the Big Show and his fist is the size of a skillet, you know? Like, okay, I get it. But, like, Lacey Evans, she's just a regular-sized chick. I mean, yeah, she's a little bit more buff than the other chicks.
She's taller compared to most of the girls on that roster, too. Like, if you line up all the women on the roster,
but it's still
in a good way,
yeah.
Crazy chick from Sanity. She stands out because she's got a little more meat on her. But Lacey Evans, she's just tall. She's big.
Yeah.
She has the pedigree of being.
But it's still just a right hand. It's still just a punch. Not even a gimmicked punch. She doesn't have like the power of the punch with the fucking brass knucks or nothing. I mean, yeah. I don't know. Like I don't like. I would love it if that's like a signature maneuver, you know, and like,
build up to the finish.
Yeah, build up to the finish or something. Oh, it's her women's right.
Still could be.
You know. Then she does something else, but I don't know. But as far as her push in general, I'm cool with it. You've got to push somebody in NXT for the women's division. You've got to keep cranking them out because once you get somebody good, main roster they go.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's developmental. So that's just how it happens. But I'm cool with them pushing her. But what about you?
Oh, dude. I've been, from the very beginning, when she had the original, when she was supposed to be a babyface and she had the old school 60s pinup theme song and
she
had the strut and everything. And then, now she's kind of a little more edgy. She's got a rock version with no lyrics and she still does the same thing. I'm a huge fan.
Okay.
I'm digging her. She is very easy to look at too. So
that
helped.
Oh, yeah. She's very easy to look at.
Like I'm rough. I mentioned this before TakeOver.
Okay.
And now we're here at square one.
Mm-hmm.
All roads are looking at Aleister Black against Tommaso Ciampa for the NXT main title.
Yes.
What's the first word that pops into your mind when you see Aleister Black in the ring and then Ciampa just interrupts?
Giggity. that's my word, giggity. I like the fact that in Tommaso's mind, he's done. And at the top of the show, when he goes out to talk to Aleister Black, he's talking about, I'm done, in reference to Gargano. I'm done with Gargano. In his mind, he's done with them. And he's like, I'm moving on. I should deserve a title shot. And I loved the way he was calling him out, where he was basically saying, yeah, you won. I was the main event. You know, people come to see me and see my matches. The title makes the man, but in your case, you know, the man makes the title or whatever. You know, mm-hmm. You flip-flopped it on him. I thought that was brilliant. It was great. It kind of gave me a little bit of pause, and I realized that I was supposed to feel like this, which was, you really done with Gargano? I'm sure Gargano, but like in his mind, it makes sense. So later on in the episode, later on when we see that Gargano's like, oh, I'm not finished with him. He won one, I won one. He spit on my ring and threw it in the crowd. No, we're not done. I'm like, there we go. Okay, there's more conflict there. And I'm cool with that because the story is, I beat you. I'm going to focus on this. No, you're not, bitch. That's what's going to happen. And I like it because, you know, I want to see Aleister versus Ciampa. But I also think that there's unfinished business with Gargano. So either that's going to lead to like some sort of shady finishes here and there, and then the heat will stay on that particular feud while Aleister stays the champ, or somehow we get a three-way or something. There's a lot of different avenues that we could go with this, and I am entertained by all of them. Or at least I think I'll be entertained by all of them.
Oh, dude. I like Lars. I like Lars Sullivan a lot. But I don't feel like he was built up as a worthy title contender. almost as good as a champion that he was when Black beat him, I don't think Black has had a credible contender. Oh, I believe TakeOver Brooklyn, SummerSlam weekend, Ciampa versus Black. That will be the first legitimate test if Black is worthy of being NXT champion and if he belongs where he's at right now.
Okay.
For the time that we've missed Ciampa because of the injury, he has taken complete advantage from the moment he's gotten back here. He is the first. I don't get the indie syndrome here where, oh, we got another guy. He's Kevin Owens. Let's rank him up to the top. Oh, shit, we got Samoa Joe. Let's rank him to the top. Oh, shit, we got fucking Nakamura. Let's rank him up to the top. No, this guy's been here on that brand since DIY from the very beginning, like 3 years. He's been there 3 years. Mm-hmm. Like, this feels a lot less like an indie promotion and a lot like NXT trying to be the third brand with Black and Ciampa.
Yeah.
And I'm very interested to see where this goes because as badass as a rivalry as Ciampa Gargano was, that wasn't for the title. So technically, that's not main event.
Even though
it ended the show.
Main event, yeah.
You know, old school wrestling mentality, the title match is always the most important.
Right.
So to have a guy that has that kind of credibility finally get a title match against a champion that a lot of people like. You know, he's cool to see. You know, he's had his stuff here and there. I'm not sure whose fault those belong to. But the fact that we're finally going to get a crowd favorite against someone that the crowd legitimately fucking hates.
Right.
In a crowd that – in an environment that can appreciate those two contrasts of personalities. Oh, dude. I can't – that could pretty much steal the entire weekend.
You know what's weird about Ciampa? The crowd really does hate him, but I also kind of feel like the crowd really does like him. But they're showing him enough respect as a heel. And I don't mean respect like I, you know, think highly of you.
They want kayfabe to be real with him.
Right. Yeah. Like they respect his ability enough for doing what he's doing. So they're like, well, we're going to boo you.
When that red light's on, we're going to
boo
shit out of you. Yeah. But then when the light turns off, we're going drinking.
Yeah, and it's like, oh my god, that was a match of the night. I love his matches, whatever. I want to see him versus whoever, you know. So it's kind of weird because it's like with Stone Cold, it was like Stone Cold was such a great heel that we cheered for him. But here it's like he's just such a great heel that we're gonna behave ourselves and we're gonna boo him like we should. Mm-hmm. Nate, what's up, man? Nice to see you back in the live chat. Which we ain't seen in decades. I'm not sure what you're referring to. But I guess that means he agrees with us. What are you referring to with which we ain't seen in decades?
How about the main event of NXT, bro?
Yeah.
Mustache Mountain was going to defend the tag titles, newly won tag titles against a couple of scrubs. I don't even know. Some random fools from Tinder. I don't know.
I don't even know
when they got the fight. I know, right? And then boom, shakalaka, Undisputed Era. Yeah. Doing what they do best, shocking the system.
Yeah.
Surprised to see Ricochet out there or no?
A little. Like, it didn't quite make sense to me why Ricochet would come to Mustache Mountain's rescue. Like, I would have thought it would have been one of the other UK guys, you know? Now, full disclosure, neither you nor I have seen any of the UK stuff just because you've been moving and, well, I don't have a good excuse. So I didn't watch any of the UK stuff. So I don't know who would have been a better fit to help Mustache Mountain. But it didn't really make sense for it to be Ricochet. Now, aside from me having that complaint that I don't get why Ricochet is helping him, I don't give a fuck. It was a badass match.
Actually, candidate, it was going to be my pick.
He says Ciampa being despised. That's what Nate – Ciampa being despised is something
That motherfucker comes out without a theme song.
He comes out to booze.
And the second you see him, it's just it rains like a Houston shower.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised to see Ricochet for a different reason.
What?
My first impression was, holy fuck, Ricochet versus Adam Cole for the U.S. title.
Baby.
For the North American title.
Yeah.
Awesome. But in the back of my mind is like, I know what a Ricochet is. I know everybody in that fucking Full Sail knows what a Ricochet is. Why isn't Ricochet fighting Aleister?
Because we have a mid-card title now? We got it. And is we that got a fill spot?
And is that going to be a situation where, hey, Brock Lesnar's got the Universal title, but The Miz is on TV every fucking week defending the IC title? Is this going to be a situation where, hey, you might be the NXT champ, but I'm the reason people are downloading. I'm the reason people are watching. I'm the reason people are making all these signs. I got everybody cheering. And we could get that where it's like, hey, which is actually the title that means the most?
Yeah.
Adam Cole versus Ricochet is going to be fucking bananas, dude.
Baby. Porsche says, she's Ricochet. He says this, you know, quotes. Ricochet, hey, I'm you. Let me make a name for myself and help out these Brits. I guess this is what the story is. I suppose, like, I'm new and that guy has a belt, so yeah. I guess I'm going to just squeeze myself in here. I mean, I'm not going to be, like, fucking really upset about it. I'm just going to be like, all right, whatever. Like, don't look that gift horse in the mouth too much. I mean, yeah. Hey, you gave me candy. Why didn't you give me candy?
Yeah.
Fuck it. Ow. You know, like, all right.
And the more I watch Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong as a team, the more I'm coming around. Because I was the biggest guy against it. You know, you and Arnold weren't the biggest fans of 1-2, Larkin and Birch. And I was going to say, you know what? I don't know about O'Reilly and Strong, but they're starting to come around to me. I don't know if they're coming around to you because you had that CM Burns moment there for a second.
Do you think that this might be a too little too late by the time Bobby Fish comes back to be like, hey, I'm here to take my spot. Go away, Roddy. And then Roddy's like, no. And Kyle's like, no. This guy's badass. He's my new partner. And then, like, fuck you, Bobby Fish. And Bobby, what the hell? Do you think that there's going to be, like, they're going to be so good of a team together?
Do you look at a Bobby Fish and say, you know what? He can make a good face.
No.
I mean, however, we already tried that Roderick Strong as a face, and look where that ended up. He's in the spirit era.
It's terrible. Man, I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know if I could see Bobby Fish as a face. I mean, he has a fucking dastardly, you know, mustache.
Dastardly. Does
really well. I mean, could it be a face? I mean, I'd have to see it first.
Not so much a face, but maybe an anti-hero? Maybe. His promos when they were...
He was always a great promo.
Yeah. I always thought he was the better promo than Kyle O'Reilly in Ring of Honor.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Kyle O'Reilly is better at body language and emoting. Like he emotes very well, and he tells the story with his body in the ring very well. Aside from the wrestling, I'm talking about like his fucking facial expressions. Like when he was trying to pull what's his name out of the ring, it's like,
yeah,
oh, you know, like he told a story without saying any words. You know, it was pretty. He's really good at that. But Bobby Fish is better actually talking. So. Yeah.
Let's stick with the smaller stuff.
Nate says, it'd be okay, but he's more of a natural heel. Okay.
Okay. Just looks. Like, first impression.
Yeah.
If he was wearing an Affliction shirt, I'd be like, oh, that's a total dick. Which is why I'm not wearing mine tonight.
That right there, sir, is a douchebag.
Yep. Noam Dar upsets TJP to open up last night's episode of 205.
Again, full disclosure, did not watch any of the UK tournament. Mm-hmm. So I heard after the fact, after I marked out, like, yeah, Noam Dar's back. Oh, yeah, he came back in the UK. Oh, well, fuck you. You know, but
I had to burst that bubble.
Yeah, man. Yeah. But TJP goes out there doing the same shtick. And now that's kind of getting traction because Rockstar Spud, I keep calling him Rockstar, Drake Maverick, actually, you know, called him out on it. Like, okay, you know, we're going to handpick you an opponent. And I didn't hazard to guess who it was. Like, I didn't bother guessing, but I definitely didn't think it was going to be a returning Noam Dar. So when I heard his, I was like, fuck yeah! Like,
you're one of the few people that I know that like Noam Dar.
I really like Noam Dar. So does Randy, my wife. Uh-huh. She really likes. She likes him more than I do. But
did that Alicia Fox feud kind of raise it for her?
Yeah,
because I think that's what killed it. Some people, I think, for some people that killed.
No, it did it for me because, like, especially in the cruiserweight division, you have the ability to just be a guy like the fucking 6'8" abs guy.
What's Tony Nese.
Yeah, you could be a Tony Nese and just get away with being a bod guy and a wrestler guy, and then that's it, and not having character. And Noam Dar, even though he was a really good wrestler, he really tried to build character, and that's what I really liked about him. He was a straight-up character guy and not just a cookie-cutter, oh, I'm just a cruiserweight, and I'm really good at wrestling, and then that's it. Like, he tried to do other stuff with who he was. So that was kind of why I liked him, man. You know, him leaving and coming back, you always come back to a pop, man. I don't care who you are. You know, if you left for a while and you show up in wrestling, you're a baby face for a split second at least.
At least.
You know?
And now that he doesn't have the feud to work with coming back to Alicia, and he came out with that injury, would you run him as a face? Keep going against TJP?
He seemed to be a face that entire match. He seemed to be a face by the end of that.
It's easy to be a face in your hometown. So that UK stuff, I wouldn't count it. They're in the
I'm
middle,
not even talking about
the UK. So they're in the middle of bumfuck nowhere last night, and he's getting a
Nebraska?
Reaction. Omaha.
Omaha.
Yeah, Omaha. And he's, like, getting no reaction. He, like, comes out, and he gets a face reaction in front of nobodies that have no idea who the fuck he is. So I would take the bait. Run for a bit. See what you do with him.
Yeah, I'm willing to give him. I believe him more of as a baby face than I do Bobby Fish. Nate in the live chat says, yeah, I was thinking it was going to be Lindsay Dorado or Grand Metalik. It was cool that was Noam, though. Yeah, I agree. Porsche in the next room says, yeah, as long as he doesn't say Alicia Fox.
He needs to have something else to say where he can. Because that's a hook, man.
He's got to have something.
So you, that like personality.
Yes.
Chat me up about Leo Rush.
Man, I kind of, you know, it's kind of weird that in the NBA and to a lesser extent the NFL and even to a lesser extent the MLB, you have these young African-American athletes that sometimes wind up getting the spotlight. And this is more so the NBA, is to get a spotlight, and then they wind up being kind of a prima donna, and but they're still like pop culture figures. And for some reason, that has never translated into wrestling, even though wrestling's all about having prima donnas. I think it's because maybe you don't have that exact same type. Either you're not young because you went through the indies for like 50 years and then you showed up, or you're just not African American. So like, you don't have both. You don't have the 19-year-old Kobe Bryant coming into the league with the fucking chip on his shoulder. You don't have the 20-year-old Lonzo Ball just showing up saying, yeah, what up? My dad's a fucking idiot. You know, you don't have that. But like, even though that's like been a trope in like sports stories, you know, you don't get that in wrestling. And it's cool that like right now, we hadn't had that before. Holy shit, Leo Rush is the first guy? Really?
He's like in his early 20s, right?
Yeah,
he's
like
a fucking kid.
He's a fucking baby. Yeah. He's a baby, and he's out there with the fucking hat and the swagger and the looking at the, like, I just came into money, and I'm going to be spending it like crazy. And like, okay, cool. I'm digging it. I'm down. That hasn't been something that I can say that I've seen with success in wrestling or the WWE. I mean,
with that gimmick in particular, or that, because it's a black kid?
A black kid with that gimmick in particular in the WWE.
I had the Daivaris in there play that.
I need to roll that back a little bit by saying in wrestling, because there's wrestling. Some in like TNA and maybe some other indies where they do that. But like, you know, that kid who's like a hotshot all-star athlete, who's a rookie, but who could still back it up just based off their athletic ability and have that swag. Yeah. You know, and that's kind of cool. And I'm willing to give him a shot. His NXT run was kind of wah. His Twitter beef that kind of made him go away. And then like, oh, damn, now he's on 205. Okay, cool. And they're giving him a shot. So I'm
that's
gonna see
the part
do.
That's surprising me the most on top of what you just said. He didn't get a chance to really talk at all at Ring of Honor. He was just the short 5'2 kid that can like make tornadoes and beat the shit out of you and do the flippy dippies like nobody else. He didn't really get much of a chance to show a charismatic side on the short run he had at NXT, because he just came with that track record of this guy can do Hurricane Ranas into freaking like anything.
Yeah.
So we've had this conversation before about, and people that they're built too well in NXT, and then they make it to the main roster and they burn out.
Right.
And then the people like Alexa Bliss and Carmella and Elias that didn't really get their run in NXT, and they're finding the run. I'm thinking that's going to be where Lio Rush falls in, since we never really got established what a Lio Rush is, other than this guy's a Black Sonic the Hedgehog. Now that he's on 205 with guys like Tozawa, Hideo, fucking Buddy Murphy, Mustafa, dude, that oh man, that is it's moves like that are making me looking forward, because I haven't watched 205 live in at least a month.
Okay,
now I'm back.
Okay.
With between the three things I saw last night, which was number one, TJP, a lot less video gamey, a lot more dickhead. That's one.
Chris likes more dickhead.
Number two, Lio Rush and Tozawa. Tozawa, just by his smile, you could tell there's charisma behind it. Oh, just waiting to come out.
Oh, yeah.
Number three, the main event for next week, Cedric against Hideo.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be great.
Yeah.
And then, the fourth is the main event, rubber match.
Before we get to that, I just want to bring this in because there's a dissenting opinion, and this is from Porsche on the other side of the wall.
Hate your own people, Porsche.
Lio Rush, meh, he's just the version of the Big Baller Brand kid. Which is, the only thing he's got going for him is that the actress who played Topanga really loves him and his wrestling. Okay, cool.
Do you have something against Topanga?
No, I don't have anything. Well, I don't know if she does. But that's kind of what I was saying, that I kind of dig about him, that he's kind of channeling that Lonzo and LeVar Ball feel and that vibe. And I kind of like that I'm a cheer for him because he's a babyface. Again, he's trying to be a heel, and I think he's going to pull it off. I feel about him more strongly, but the same feeling that I felt about Big Cass. Now, I was wrong about Big Cass. He wound up getting the boot, whatever.
You're beating up people Lio Rush's size.
Yeah, I'll take that L. I'll take that L. But I was optimistic about Big Cass, despite the fact that some of his promos were a little iffy. This promo with Lio was a little iffy, but I feel like I'm standing on more solid ground with Lio than I was with Big Cass.
Characters like Lio, if you do them right, you're gonna win either way, because the way like the braggadocious, the like I'm kind of a big deal, my shit don't stink, enjoy me. If he flourishes, like if you build him up as like a dick but that can actually win his matches, he start to get respect for him. And if he loses, that's exactly the kind of motherfucker you want to lose.
Yeah.
So that you can revel in him losing, and then him hear the speeches of, "Oh, I didn't lose. That was nothing. That's a nothing match."
Yeah.
I have no recollection of that.
Yeah.
You know, shit like that. Yeah. Like that, dude. That's like, easy. That's easy if he can stick to it.
I'm ready to boo him the way I'll boo LeBron.
Hey man, you can move to LA whenever you want.
Fuck that. Porsche goes, Topanga is great. Just she don't know no better, I guess, when it comes to wrestling. She don't know no better. All right.
Do you think main event? Hold on.
Oh.
Let's take a little detour real quick. With LeBron in LA.
Uh-huh.
In the West.
Uh-huh.
Against Golden State.
Uh-huh.
And the Rockets.
Uh-huh.
In San Antonio.
Yeah.
How do you think he'll do?
Man.
They also signed old guy from Boston. He used to had that run in Boston.
Yeah, they're far away from competing with the Rockets and from competing with Golden State, especially now that fucking Golden State got that other fucking idiot.
Oh, Cousins.
Yeah,
that's like, fucking bullshit. Oh, I didn't get any offers. This fucking trade was 2 days old. He wanted to go to Golden State because he wanted to.
Yeah,
go.
Yeah. It's,
but dude,
like
low key. Dallas with DeAndre Jordan, Dirk Nowitzki's got a year or two left, and Luke, no, but Dirk Nowitzki teaching Luka Doncic to be the next Dirk Nowitzki, dude. Dallas could be on the come up too. The West is getting a lot stronger.
Yeah, and the East is getting a lot weaker, which sucks.
Except for Philly, but you got to water that.
And yeah,
give it a couple of decades for it to grow.
The king of nothing over there. There's nothing going on in the East. But okay. Anyway,
back to the main event. Rubber match. Ali Murphy 3. Go.
Main event. And I really, really liked it. I want it to say that this is my match of the week pick, but I'm a little apprehensive.
But what's the flaws in that match that are keeping you from putting this on the top pedestal?
I don't know what the flaws are, but what I do know is that there was a lot of good stuff in that match, but there's another match that also had a lot of good stuff. So I'm just trying to figure out which match was gooder. They were both really good. Just I don't know which one's gooder. As far as flaws go, dude, I don't know if there's a flaw. Like, I tried to come up with the flaw with this match, with this no DQ match, and it was this, but then it was quelled in the middle of watching the match. So I'll throw this out here as a potential flaw and see what you think. The match started right from the jump. Mustafa Ali ran out there, didn't wait for the bell, just started taking it to Buddy Murphy. So already, right out the gate, you're going 100 miles an hour. I thought that was fucking great because that's the type of thing that Arnold always complains about when he's talking about New Japan matches, all these five-star matches. And it's like, oh, man, they always fucking... You know,
they've wrestled three times. They should know.
Yeah, they should know. And that's exactly what they did. Mustafa Ali fucking knew. And he went, boom, balls to the wall. But then that you know, little bit of a slow pace where the match started off, it was kind of inverted in this match because there was a bit of a slow pace about a quarter into the match. You know, there was that big start, that big hurry to start. And then there was the lull. And I was like, oh, that kind of sucks.
I love the commentary that McGinnis says, like, did he already run out of gas?
Exactly. That's what brought me around to it, where when McGinnis was saying, oh, yeah, Buddy Murphy got attacked, but he weathered the storm, and this is a strategy thing. And I was like, all right, that brought me back around. Now, if the match had stayed at that level, because this match went like this, whoa! And if it stayed there like that, then I would be like, oh, fuck this match. But no, it went, whoa! Like, it just went right back up. And there was things in this match that I've never seen before. A couple of things that I've never seen before. And I really liked it. It kind of reminded me of that TLC maybe like 3-4 years ago where it was tables, ladders, chairs, and stairs.
Oh, yeah.
But then they didn't really do a whole lot with the stairs. They just did your typical throw them into the stair or hit them with the stair match. I think they did so much creative-ass shit with the stairs in this match that I was like, they're really fucking trying to do something that I've never seen before, and they succeeded. Where they put the stairs up over by the corner, standing up, and did the fucking suplex off of the stairs with the stairs long ways like that. That was cool. I've never seen that before. When Buddy Murphy had the stairs towards the ropes where he jumped up onto the stairs to jump over to do the suicide dive or the flip or whatever to the outside. That was really cool. And you would think that wouldn't make that big of a difference, but it did. That extra foot and a half. Holy shit. It looked like he got like 90 feet in the air when he got air. You wouldn't think that. And then of course the finish where it was that tilt-a-whirl Hurricanrana DDT. You wouldn't think, oh, off the stairs, so what? But, man, it looks so impactful. Just that extra foot and a half or so off of the stairs onto the canvas, it made it look fucking devastating. That was fucking sick, man. So, yeah. And then on top of that, I'm going to say this, and you're not going to like it. Arnold may not like it if he's watching this. But I got a bit of an Omega vibe with all those spammed V triggers there at the end of the match that Buddy Murphy was doing, where he was running knee, whatever. It was a fucking V trigger every time. Like, he did like three in a row while he was Mustafa was tied up in the ropes, and I was like, I was like, V trigger, like every time. And I mean, I know it wasn't a V trigger, whatever, but I was sitting there thinking, they're doing their best goddamn Kenny Omega impersonation here, and I fucking love it, and it's working. And then once they got him out of the ropes, and Mustafa's like dead, but still like, fuck you, and he's like crumpled in a heap, and Murphy just picks him up by the arms, and bam, another V-trigger. I was like, that's it, he's dead, he's already dead. Why are you dead? He wasn't dead. Like, it felt like one of those Meltzer 5-star for Kenny Omega type matches in the WWE.
Wow.
So I kind of want to make this my match of the week.
I kind of have to finish watching the rest of it because I fell asleep.
God damn it.
So you ruined all of it for me. As soon as you told me about the stairs, I was like, okay, that's where I left off. And I'm just trying to go like this. And you just go, I was like, okay, yeah, okay, fuck.
Sorry.
Maybe we can have a debate over the weekend with the people on Facebook to see which of these two matches, because the other one's coming.
The other one's coming. We'll talk about the other one here.
But man, I am very curious.
LeBron's gonna star in Rough Rough Ref with the Miz.
That's racist if he's the dog.
God damn it.
How about Raw? That's good you feel that way, because I have very little notes about Raw. And it's weird because a lot happened. I watched this with Travis, and I told him, like, maybe 2 hours in, you must really like this episode because you have not used that fast-forward button a lot.
Okay.
Because so there actually was a lot, but most of it was, for example, the return of Dr. Shelby.
Yes. That was pretty cool.
It felt like a page out of Saved by the Bell in the beginning before he popped up. But he for the last couple of months, the whole Sasha Bailey stuff, I was getting tired of. I was getting worn through. I was already sick of. And for some reason, Shelby inserted himself when he needed to,
yes,
to keep everything fresh and entertaining.
Yeah.
I don't care that if it wasn't entertaining. I just wanted it to be fresh because, again, they've done so much teasing without pulling the trigger on them that I felt like by the time it would be too late, I wouldn't care about anything.
Okay, yeah.
And he just made me watch everything.
Okay.
What did you think?
I think Dr. Shelby, the guy himself, has just a natural born charisma that it just works. I'm happy to see him, but I'm also sad that why the fuck have we not seen more of this guy? You know, like, I want to mark out for him so hard, but I'm also apprehensive because I was like, man, I'm going to like get so invested in this character and we're not going to see him again, ever, probably. You know, like, unless they do another rehash of, like, somebody else having to go to counseling. But I think this rehash is one rehash enough. Even though I get to see Dr. Shelby, you know, so there's, like, mixed feelings there. What Shelby did, the way he did his thing was great. With the fucking seven steps of friendship or whatever. Joy and respect and acceptance, love and all that. Like, oh, my God. It was so...
It was, and he had it on the wall in between both of them. Oh my God.
It was almost cringeworthy, but it was adorable cringeworthy. So it was, I just like it. Like, he pulls it off, man, and he's just really good at it. I just don't know how you're gonna stick that into wrestling more. I don't know. But it was good.
The only other possible way I could see it is if somebody has a Hell in a Cell match and somebody falls off the top of the cage, and then you have like the doctors checking to see if he's all right. Then you have Dr. Shelby run out. Is there anything I can make you do to make you feel more positive? Or have him like as part of the staff, as part of the Hell staff. Like, say, like when Nia was hurting the shoulder, she had her ice taped and all months ago. And you have the doctors like, hey, do you feel it pop? And then have Dr. Shelby behind her. Hey, how does this make you feel?
I mean, they could do a thing with like a heel who's like trying to become a babyface and have Dr. Shelby being the one that turns them, where it's not like, oh, friend counseling, but more like, Mojo, you need to calm the fuck down.
Here are these pills.
Don't you remember what it was like to be hyped? Don't you remember how much fun you used to have? And, you know, and do that kind of thing to, like, you know, move somebody around, you know.
Or dude, like, bring CM Punk back for Shelby.
Or fucking Sanity or something. Like, somebody that's fucking loco, like, have them just, like, counsel. Oh, well, how does that make you feel?
Sanity redebuts the same.
Or, like, the Bludgeon Brothers. Well, I know that you're always hitting people with hammers. Why do you think you have to hit people with hammers? Well, Doc, it all started when it, There's stuff you could do.
USA tends to have these crazy commercials whenever they promote their season premieres of Raw. That needs to be Dr. Shelby interviewing random wrestlers and asking. And that's how you bring them back and drop so you don't get worn out.
Okay.
You know, because WWE does have that thing. If there's something fans are going to like, they're going to run it down your throat and run it to the ground until you're sick as fuck of it. And then we're going to give you what you want, but you're not going to give a fuck by then anyway. So... How about the opening segment with Seth and Roman against McZiggles?
Roman, two matches with Roman, like, goddamn.
Gacy Omeja loves Roman.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's just like, I've said that I'm not going to have Roman hate, but that doesn't mean that I'm by default have Roman love.
You have Roman.
I have Roman like, okay, Roman's a necessary evil at this point of the way when I see it, but like, you're really going to have two matches with Roman? And like, I kind of like, I do like Seth's reaction. Seth was like, yeah, okay, yeah, we'll do that. And like, you also have a match. You're going to have two matches? Wait, Seth's like,
have mine first.
Yeah. Like, Seth's reaction was appropriate. Yeah. You know, and I wish that they would have been, went a little bit more with that. But they didn't. But whatever.
Help me out here with the second part.
Gotcha.
Who is supposed to be the heel in this? Lashley or Reigns? Reigns walks out there like, bitch, I don't need you. You just stand there and smile. I'm going to do all the work and show you why I'm the man around here, why this is my yard, and you're just a little bitch in it.
Yeah.
Yet he gets the shit beat out of him, and Lashley just walks out like, fuck this guy. This is what he gets. He wrote a check that his hands can't cash. Who's the heel in this?
Man, I don't know. Like, I think WWE thinks that both guys are babyface, but neither one of them are. But like with Roman, Roman's not a babyface because people just don't like him. Lashley's not a babyface because people don't care about him. Like, he's neither. Like, there's a game that I play on my phone that's a wrestling-based game, but it's not WWE, where basically you get these little guys or whatever, and you level them up, and then like they start off as neutral. As wrestlers, they're neutral. Then when you level them up to a certain level, you could choose to be a heel or babyface, and then they have different abilities. Right now, Lashley is that level one fucking guy that is neutral. He's not a heel or a babyface. He's just like level there. One, whatever. He's just there. If anybody cares, it's called the Muscle Hustle, if anybody wants to play it. But yeah, if you're on my Facebook, and then we'll exchange money on there. We could
exchange money.
Level each other up, by the way. The Muscle Hustle. Check it out.
So that's what you call prostitution now, huh?
Yes.
Level each other up. Yeah. Do the exchange.
No, but
neutral my ass.
Yeah, but like Lashley isn't leveled up yet to be a heel or a babyface, and I just don't know. Like, I think Vince is like, oh well, he's good. So let people do whatever they want with him. Like, okay. I don't know what to do with him. You know, so it's like. I don't know. They're both kind of being, if you forget the way that you feel about them personally, you know, if you just look at the paint by numbers and take out Roman and Lashley and just look at wrestler A, wrestler B, and look at the formula. Oh, they both are really good. They both are really big. And one says he doesn't need the other. Who's the baby face and who's the heel in that? I don't know. Cause that's like a formula that's been more of a formula for people breaking up and people take sides when one does something that's way more obviously dickish than the other. And we haven't had that from either. Both have been kind of irrational, but justified.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's a long answer to a short question.
Oh, no. You hit the hell right on the head. Like, you answered all my questions. Enough of them. I just feel like this was thrown together because Sammy's hurt. I think they had more of a plan between Lashley and Sammy. And after the injury, they just said, okay, fuck it. It's just... sticking with the guy nobody likes. Is Constable Corbin working for you?
Kinda. I like his new look. I like the haircut. I like the vest.
See my vest. See my vest. Made of real gorilla chest. That's for Arnold.
I like the vest. I like the look, the hair, and all that. The lack of hair. The extension of Stephanie McMahon's presence on Raw, I could take or leave. Mm-hmm. Like I WWE has ridden that fucking horse since the fucking 90s to the ground of the heel authority figure. You know, it's always been somebody. It's been fucking Vicky Guerrero or John Laurinaitis or Eric Bischoff or Vince or Stephanie and Triple H. And
Shane.
Like Shane. Like, there's always been a heel authority figure. So when you don't have a heel authority figure, it's kind of refreshing. And we kind of have nothing but face authority figures right now. Kurt, Paige, and Rockstar Spud. Well, the fuck is the name? Drake Maverick.
No, you got it right.
Rockstar Spud. And I'm kind of enjoying this. And Regal. You know, I'm enjoying it where they're all fucking baby faces and it's cool. But now it's like not knocking Corbin because I think he's doing okay with the role. It's just, why do we have to have this role?
I'll tell you why.
Okay, why?
Because it hit me last night.
Oh.
Like a flood of emotion. Corbin's promos when they're post, like before, backstage, pre-done, anything like that, they're pretty good. They're okay.
Okay.
Him interacting with Finn in the ring in that promo that they had was the first time I ever felt like there was not just an ounce, but more than an ounce of charisma. This whole heavy metal thing wasn't working. This whole like Money in the Bank thing, the whole like prize fighter boxer history. They tried all that shit and it didn't work. Okay. He was still right there.
Okay.
Now with this Constable Corbin and him ditching the hair, refreshing the look, him being a little more comfortable with who he is. Oh, you know what? You're known for being a dick. You know what? Run with it. Just be a dick. And it's coming out. And it's coming out. And it feels organic, this guy.
Okay.
And him playing off of Finn. Like, Finn's like, yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry for whoever gave you that fucking haircut. It's like, ah, you motherfucker, you. Like, this is the first time I've ever said this on this show. I want more of Baron Corbin. After that exchange with Finn, it's like, all right, this is why they gave him the role. Everything that you look at him and see that should work isn't working. All right, he's a metalhead. That shit doesn't work. Oh, dude, he's got a boxing background. That shit's not working. All right, let's make him pretend to be somebody he's not. Let's make him pretend he's kind of a big deal. Because, you know, even if you from what I've heard, those Breaking Ground stories,
right.
Even like Michael Hayes was complaining, this guy walks around acting like he's too big for his britches. So fucking run with it. Pretend you be yourself and just turn it up to 11 like all the other guys in the Attitude Era that got over doing exactly that.
Exactly.
And as of Monday, to me, it's working.
Okay.
And I want more of it. Even if we're getting Finn versus Corbin, because again, Finn's a good pinball against against a bumper like Corbin, you know?
Finn's a good pinball against anything.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. As far as what you're saying, where he's given the role and the role is working well for him, I can see where you're coming from. You may have even just convinced me. I get it. I get where you're saying. I get where you're coming from. As far as the need for the role, that's the part that just kind of rubs me, not necessarily the wrong way, but just like it feels a little old hat, you know, having another fucking heel authority figure. But if he's good at it, then fuck it. He's good at it, you know? Maybe we could have a heel authority figure that I like. Because it's all about me and what I like.
I know what I didn't like.
What? Okay, what's that?
That whole fucking Kevin Owens, Braun Strowman, Porta John.
Oh, really? Ooh, we're going to have a difference of opinion here. I love this. Go for it, sir.
Feels completely unnecessary.
Okay, unnecessary.
Another example of several weeks ago, what are we doing with these NXT guys that we do so well building up and then we throw them to the main roster and when we have nothing to do with them, they're just like there. I don't see the point. Like, Braun's already beaten up Kevin Owens for the past 2 months before this feud even started.
Okay.
How many times have we seen Braun Strowman knock over Kevin Owens into a flip? Like, it feels like I've already seen this. Mm-hmm. So why are we putting more focus on this now when we know damn well, like, but I don't get the impression that anything's going to come out of it. This is just feels like filler until the day Brock Lesnar decides to show up into the arena just for Braun to eat him up and spit him out. Yeah.
Oh.
And Owens, I was more entertained with Owens in that footage on Facebook of him at the Shania Twain concert with the sign. It's like, hey, I got more Twitter followers than you, so everybody's really here to see me. You know, that I like. This stuff backstage with Kurt Angle. It's like, yeah, you know, somebody needs therapy is that motherfucker over there that breaks shit, that kills people. But the whole, like, building up to the match and stuff, I was like, I don't see the point of this. Mm. It just,
Okay.
So here's where you're going to prove me wrong. Go.
I think Kevin really did a great job throughout the entire night, bringing up a lot of quips and little smart aleck points to, like, everybody about everything. Like, he's fucking savage when it comes to just, like, throwing in these little under the radar, like,
jabs.
And, like, he's just great at it. So I'm entertained thoroughly with Kevin Owens. I'm also entertained thoroughly with Braun Strowman. And you're right that this might just be filler for whenever Brock shows up so you can finally get a cash in. But I don't blame Kevin or Braun for that. I blame Brock for that. Like, what do you want Brock to do? Or what do you want Strowman to do when Brock's not there? He's got to do something, and I want to see him do something. So that's where I'm cool with it, because they're both doing their roles really well. And I am entertained by this shenanigans that's fucking ridiculous. Kevin Owens showing up all paranoid with the hoodie was gold. Coming over, sneaking up to Kurt so he could take off the hoodie and have the conversation, it was gold. Him trying to sneak around and talk to other people all night was fucking gold. Then Strowman finally trying to get his hands on him was gold. Kevin Owens running the fuck away. I don't care if I get counted out and ran as far as he could was gold.
Braun Strowman channeling his inner Wolverine.
Yeah, Braun Strowman
turns around.
And that was gold too. And like when he couldn't get into his car, when Kevin couldn't get into his car, I was like,
"That's all.
Where
Kevin,
am I going?"
Though. All that's Kevin though.
It was all Kevin. And I'm giving props to both of them here. Mm-hmm. But he was like, porta potty, like, you fucking idiot. Oh man, he's not gonna get away with this. And like, he walked up there, Braun Strowman walked up there, looked around, and he started walking away. I was like, he's getting away with this? Like, I was fooled for a split second. And he was like, smelled, walked back, and it was like,
he did the girly light voice.
He did light dawns on head. He's in there.
It's a funny, like, episode of Looney Tunes.
Yeah, it was fucking great. And like,
is anyone in there?
No, like, try to fucking pull it. What do you
fucking
mean?
Daffy Duck got tipped over.
All right. So I'm kind of a sucker for the shenanigans with Braun also doing the flipping over the big stuff and doing things with the set and big prop stuff. Like, he's really good at doing the prop things when it's like feats of strength or whatever. And we didn't see it last week. We just saw the aftermath with the car flipped over. This week we did see that. And while, okay, maybe it's not as impressive as flipping an ambulance, you know, like, this dude put a porta potty with a grown ass man inside it on his fucking shoulders and drug it all the way through. And then Kevin, like, yelling throughout the entire time in terror, what are you doing? Where are you going? Oh, no. You're like, that was hilarious. I was entertained. So at the end of the day, I get your misgivings that, where's it leading to? Why are we doing this? It's just filler for something else. I totally understand all that, but I'm enjoying it for what it's worth, and I thought it was funny as shit. And it kicked him off of the fucking stage, and that was kind of lame because it was like, boop, like, not even that far. Yeah. That was kind of lame, but leading up to there and then seeing the aftermath of him in all the fucking blue goo from the porta potty, I couldn't help but laugh.
Gross.
It was gross. The only thing Braun could do is throw people over ledges. What else they got? That was according to Porsche. Okay. No, that's all you can do. All right. I think it's funny, though.
I can't put the whole blame on Braun because the booking has gone to the point where Braun's, like, kind of going towards the babyface side.
Yes.
If Braun was adamant from the moment he won the briefcase, and if he was still booked as the monster and not the guy high-fiving kids on the ringside and stuff like that, I'd have fucking Braun go to paint Heyman's house.
Paint Heyman's
house? No, I'd have him go to Heyman's house.
Oh, go to Heyman's house. Just, you like, know?
And again,
where's Brock?
Like break the door down. Again, I said this before. I know people are going to look at me like I'm stupid. Have him go to the UFC gym in the headquarters. Have him bang on the door. Literally have a door that says fucking it's escaping me. The president of UFC,
Dana White.
Dana White, have the thing with Dana White's name on it, and break it down, and don't show the meeting, but just insinuate that he literally went to UFC to find Brock, to the point where Brock has to come fight Strowman before Strowman finds Brock.
Yeah.
Have Brock be the guy in charge of his own fate, instead of having Strowman. Like, you could have done that.
And you could still do that.
No, he's too busy tipping over blue stuff with fat people. Like, I don't know, man.
All right.
I missed SmackDown because I had to work last night. Fucking Dynamo game, rain delayed. It was a 2-hour fucking delay. So by the time I got home, I was already gone.
All right.
You want to rapid fire SmackDown real quick? Because I asked you before we started taping. Like, hey, man, what do you remember from SmackDown? And you all were fishing for some shit.
We were fishing. We were fishing a lot.
I saw the reuniting of Team Hell No last week.
Yes.
So what happened yesterday?
Well, we had Team Hell No out there talking about, you know, them being back together, doing an interview with Renee. Was it Renee or was it
Charlie? You're like, I watched it.
I don't know. It was one of the interviewers. I think it was Renee. If it wasn't Renee, it was like probably Charlie. But anyway, you know, hey, you guys are back and this and that. And then Kane just starts talking about, oh, yeah, because I always have your back, Brian, and this and that. And Brian's like, no, you don't. What do you mean? Of course I do. The last time we were in the ring together, you tried to end my career by, you know, doing this and that, which they're like, oh, I totally forgot. It was, yeah. That was the last time we had seen Brian after he was getting fucking mollywomped by Kane.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, cool. So there. That was cool that there was that continuity there, bringing that up, and now you see why Brian was a little bit hesitant last week, and that was spilling over to this week, and then that like devolved down into, I have your back. No, you don't. Yes, I do. No, you don't. Yes, no. Yes, no. And you know, then the Usos came out, and the Usos were like, hey, just because these guys hug doesn't mean they get a shot at the title. What the hell? And, you know, I think Jay said this. I've been hugging this ugly dude since we were kids. I hug this ugly dude every day.
I fucking love that.
Yeah, it was great. That's it's awesome. Like, you know what? We're going to hug right now. So they hugged. And they're like, you know what? We'll do it again. And they, like, hugged. I'm like, I guess that means now we get a title shot because we hug it. That was hilarious. That was great. But, you know, basically that turned into Paige coming out and making a match for later in the evening. Kane, D-Bry, you have the bludgeons at Extreme Rules. But if Usos, if you could beat Kane and D-Bry, then it's a triple threat, a three-way. So my thinking was, oh, well, I guess we're going to get a three-way at Extreme Rules because you don't make that kind of match with that kind of stipulation where, you know, if the other guy wins.
They always make that match in the intent to have them.
To have the three-way.
Yeah.
Right.
But?
I was wrong. They had the match. It was a good little match. It was entertaining. Maybe match of the week candidate, maybe on the lower end, but whatever. It was cool.
D-Bry against either one of the Usos could be fun to watch.
Actually, Kane, he was throwing around the Usos and taking the Usos flying off of doing suicides and stuff. It was pretty cool. Kane did good in that match.
Okay.
But so did D-Bry. Yeah, I mean, it was a solid match. But the Usos didn't win. Kane and D-Bry won. So bye-bye, Usos. So yeah, I guess it's just the Team Hell No versus the Bludgeons at Extreme Rules, which I totally thought was not going to be the outcome of that match. So, okay, cool. I got surprised. That's cool. That's something that I kind of always complain about, predictability about wrestling. Sometimes you got to do the thing that you don't want to do
to
keep it fresh. Yeah. So, okay, cool. Like, why do you do a leapfrog when you get shot off the ropes? Well, because if you don't, you run into the guy. But you never see anybody run into the guy. We got to at least have somebody run into the guy once.
Yeah.
You know, like the Money in the Bank briefcase. Well, there's just, sometimes when they don't cash it in or they cash it in unsuccessfully. So you got to see the times when they lose. I mean, it's only been 3 out of 18. Mm-hmm. But you got to have those exceptions to kind of keep it fresh. But, yeah.
So, I hear they're bringing back the Open Challenge at least.
Yeah. Yeah. Nakamura is still dog bitten, apparently. So Nakamura wasn't there. We had a star spangled Jeff Hardy. He had a red, white, and blue face paint say that he's defending the red, white, and blue title. an open challenge, and it was him versus The Miz. The Miz answered the challenge. Good little match. Hardy retained in a pretty competitive match. I'm not sure which was the best match between them or the tag match. They were both pretty good. They were both, again, maybe match of the week candidates on the lower end of things, but it was fun. It was something to give Jeff something to do until we're waiting for Nakamura to heal from his dog bite wounds.
Ellsworth versus Asuka.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, thank you, Porsche. You reminded me. This is probably Kane's last hurrah before becoming mayor of, was it Knox County, I think it's called? Yeah, so yeah, maybe this is Kane's. You know, Kane showed up. Hey, I need to go ahead and get all my last stuff in before I go away. I'm sorry. Okay, Ellsworth versus Asuka. That was kind of fun, but kind of unsatisfying at the same time. Because I wanted to see Asuka just beat the ever-living shit out of Ellsworth and get the pin and the win and whatever. But, you know, out comes Asuka. Out comes Ellsworth to Ellsworth's douchey 90s punk kind of music.
Offspring.
Yeah, kind of. Kind of sounds like it's vaguely offspringy, but not quite. It sounds more douchey. So, like, if Offspring and Nickelback had a baby, you know.
Don't ever,
yeah,
ever put those two in the same sentence. Please.
Well, that's
for our friendship's sake.
I mean, that's what makes it bad. but, yeah, he's out there looking like a fucking idiot, and he has a t-shirt that says, "Nobody's ready for Ellsworth."
And it has an arrow pointing down.
Oh, God. And, you know, they're really running with this whole misogynistic thing with him, because earlier in the night he was like in front of a mirror flexing his dad bod and like, "I'm a man, and because I'm a man, I'm going to kick her ass. She doesn't deserve to be in the ring with somebody like this," and like just being fucking misogynistic out the ass, just being a chauvinistic pig. And they're like, actually running with it, because even Asuka called him in a separate promo, backstage promo, "Oh, the chauvinistic pig, he'll get beat," or whatever. So I'm cool that they're actually addressing that and showing that in that light, because you got to have, you know, the heel doing the bad thing to show that the bad thing is bad,
yeah.
You know, and that's what they're doing.
I actually like that they're actually building, having the payoff from the concept of mixed match challenge, because, you know, as much as we love Lucha and we fawn over Lucha and we're about to in a few minutes, I like the idea that the women were actually getting some play against the men during these Mitch Max challenge matches.
Yeah.
And if there's a rivalry right now that warrants the opportunity of having a man versus a woman, it would be Asuka versus Ellsworth.
Yeah.
People would want to see it. People would be entertained to see it. And I bet, judging by whatever outcome they would get, even if it's Ellsworth beating Asuka, they get some fucking pub out of it. Well, the week after Money in the Bank when Asuka lost, I said it on this show. Give me at Extreme Rules a leather strap match between Ellsworth and Asuka. And it's completely plausible. We know why we got it. We know how we got there. We know who we're supposed to like, and we know who we're supposed to hate. And you don't have to be a wrestling fan to understand that. Anybody that will turn on the clicker and see a commercial of those two with a strap between them, they're going to be like, "Holy fuck, I need to watch this."
Yeah. Although, you know, with the FCC rules, they won't get away with it. Or at least they're self-imposed FCC rules, because the channel that they're on, they won't get away with Ellsworth hitting Asuka.
But on pay-per-view, on their network.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, the reason why I said I was a little unsatisfied with this match is because it pretty much ended in a countout. Ellsworth ran away. Asuka followed. Count of 10. And they, like, ran out of the arena all the way to the fucking corridor. Yes, thank you, Arnold. You know, for the... What's that called? Not the corridor. Like...
The parking garage?
Yeah, well, not the parking garage. Like, where you buy the fucking chips and
stuff. Oh, concessions.
Yeah, like, out by, like, there. Like, outside of the actual arena, but still inside the building. Like, already out there, the cameras weren't on them. But then, next thing you know, they were coming in on the other side, still running. You know, Ellsworth running. And then, boom! Carmella intercepts Asuka, knocks her the fuck out! So just sends her flying into the barricade. And it looked sick. But then she grabs fucking Ellsworth by the ear. It's like, "Come on, you fucking idiot!" You know, drags her along, yeah, drags him along, and whatever. So it was kind of like a setup ruse kind of thing. All right, well, it was a, you know, a count out, but it kept the heat going for the feud, basically, because this feud isn't supposed to be Ellsworth versus Asuka. This feud is Asuka versus Carmella, and that's exactly what they wound up doing here with this. You know, they're using Ellsworth as a device. So, yeah. All right, so that's that. Is that all the notes that we have from SmackDown?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all that you were able to muster.
That's all I care. Well, I know
Rusev Aiden, did a thing.
Well, Aiden English fought AJ and lost via tap.
Yeah.
And then did they jump AJ Sanity, afterwards?
Sanity and the pancake contest.
The New Day had a first annual 3rd of July pancake eating contest. That's what they called it. So there was a stack of red pancakes in front of Big E, a stack of white pancakes in front of Xavier, and a stack of blue pancakes in front of Kofi.
I hope that's food coloring.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, okay.
It just looks gross.
Yeah, whoever could stuff the most pancakes in their mouth, you know, wins, and they're going to time it for a minute. And Saxon was out there with the fucking hat with the red, white, and blue on it. They had the little table with the curtain or the apron on there and all that. And then they started the timer started going, and they're trying to shove pancakes in their mouth. Lights go out, Sanity music's hit. They all look to the ramp and they get in the back of the head from the other side. So it looks like we're going to get Sanity versus the New Day, which I'm cool with.
Are you sure about that? Because last week we were supposed to get Sanity versus the Usos, and that never even finished. I kind of like right now. The point of Sanity is these motherfuckers are crazy. And right now, they're beating up randomness. Mm-hmm. Like, let them do this for a couple more weeks before we find a team or a group of people that are like, you know what? Like the Shield before, where they just randomly beat the fuck out of people.
Yeah.
Where people stand up be like, you know what? We don't need them. And they try to make Sanity sane, and they fail miserably. Mm-hmm. But just have them beat the fuck out of people.
Byron Saxton looked like the dude from Get Out, says Porsche. He did. He kind of did.
Shit. So we go from Byron Saxton looking like the people from Get Out to the characters from Coco at the main event of Lucha Underground.
Yes. All right. Let's talk about Lucha Underground. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, before we get to that, there was something that happened earlier in the show. You had the Worldwide Underground in the back talking with each other. And Ricky said that he went to visit the Island of Dolls in Mexico, which is
a real place.
It's a real thing, by the way. It's an island.
Google it.
With a bunch of dolls. Everybody just puts up old dolls on the trees, and it's creepy as fuck. Anyway, they reference that, and apparently Ricky brought back a doll from the Island of Dolls and pulled the cord, and it said something creepy. I can't forget remember what it
said. Don't worry. Your secret's safe with me.
Well, that was the last thing that it said.
Oh, but, yeah. No. Like, John, like this is – this is the doll's name, man. He pulls through. He goes, hi. Or like the conversations, and she's filling in the conversation. Like if it has a mind. Oh, my God. Lucha Underground.
This creepy little doll.
Fucking Lucha.
Which, well, in that same in the same thing. Okay, I know that you're going to kind of, you know, overshadow this with the doll stuff, because the doll stuff was creepy as hell. And it's like Ricky Reyes had this.
Ricky Mundo.
Ricky Mundo, sorry.
Ricky Mandel. I don't know.
He had this evil look on his face when he was holding it, and the rest of the world, you're like, you know, it was like, I don't know what the fuck's going on here. But that's going to overshadow this other nice little part in there, in that whole thing where Johnny Mundo was doling out, you know, instructions to everybody, orders, and saying, hey, you go out there to Jack Evans.
Yeah.
Hey, you go out there, call out one of the snakes from the snake tribe, and, you know, take him to Slamtown. And he's like, I don't do snakes. I'm like, what do you mean you don't do snakes? You're the Dragon Slayer. The dragon's different than a snake. What do you mean, dragon? And they start bickering with each other.
Oh, hilarious. No, I fucking love it. He was like, you get respect after killing a dragon. Snakes are just nasty. But it made fucking sense.
It did.
Like Jack Evans, the guy that flips and dips for a living, actually had a modicum of sense.
Yeah.
And it was believable. I was like, I got you. You're not a complete dick.
Yeah. So Jack Evans winds up going
and
out
he
there.
Left. He's like, I got colonics. I got shit going up my ass a little bit, so I got to go.
We had a new luchador debut.
Oh.
Oh, shit. I can't remember the name now. I don't know.
Younger, blacker Pimpinella.
Younger, blacker Pimpinella. Exactly. Yeah. A new exotico. So going out there looking, you know.
Right off of Bourbon Street.
Yeah, which, yes, right off of Bourbon Street. Right down off of Montrose looking fabulous. And that booty though. Oh, my God.
What the fuck? I guess you could say it because you're married now.
Huh? Yes, so yes, I can say it. It doesn't matter. Yeah, I got my beard.
Yeah.
Oh, it was, thank you, Porsche. It was Xolicious was the name. Xolicious.
Oh, my God. Yeah,
but that was entertaining. Okay, so that's that of Lucha Underground. Let's get to the good.
The nitty-gritty. You right. Tell me. I walked in before pre-tape. I got here early enough, swimming through over here. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, is there anything from Lucha I need to watch? Bitch, you need to watch this three-way. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Puts on the three-way.
It was almost more entertaining watching Chris's reactions than watching the match for a second time. Because Chris, every 5 seconds, oh my God, holy shit, you know, it was great. It was great consequences, except with three people. So the way you win is you stick two other fuckers elimination style in caskets, which I don't think WWE's ever done that. Casket match with three people?
No. It's good. Always been one-on-one.
Good job fucking
Lucha Underground. They did a tag team match once, I think.
Did they?
Yeah.
But if like one member of the tag team got put
both
in?
Both of them.
Both of them had to be put in at the same time? The same.
Somebody fact checked that, but I could have sworn there was a tag match. Kane and Undertaker against somebody in a casket match.
Okay. Well, whatever. I never seen a three-way where it was elimination style by putting people in the casket. That was cool. So just the fact that they're still trying to do innovative different stuff. Because we kind of got that in spades in the first season. You know, every time that they rolled out a new thing, oh, shit, that's new. I never heard of that. Oh, wow, that's cool. But then season two is like, hey, all that cool innovative shit we did in season one, we're doing that again.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But like here, you know, well, and then season three was kind of like, hey, we're going to just have gimmicked Extreme Rules matches, you know, with the
the modern warf, not the modern warfare modern one, warfare and then match. The one with the cops, yeah, and the bear claw from hell.
It was all basically just Extreme Rules matches, anything goes,
but
matches,
tailored to the storyline,
but with a theme.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, oh, okay, cool. I guess they're out of original ideas. Well, this match, original idea, good job, way to go.
Yeah.
So, the match itself, we had it was Phoenix versus Mil Muertes versus Jeremiah Crane. Now, the reason why this match is happening is because Katrina was like, yo, man, I need souls so that I can live. So we need to kill some motherfuckers. And not Dario, but Antonio Cueto was like, well, if that means next time you have to knock on my door, then sure. Okay. So I was like, you just don't want the inconvenience of having a spirit poof out of nowhere. You'd rather have the spirit be alive so they have to, can you let me in? Like, okay, you fucking apathetic motherfucker. All right.
And that's where it works. We talked earlier about, oh, man, I'm tired of heel people in charge. I want baby faces in charge. I'm getting the vibe from Antonio, just like Dario. He's not a heel or a face. He's an equal opportunity asshole. He'll give a good guy and a bad guy the same shot as long as it's good for him, for his enjoyment and his business.
Yeah.
And I'm getting that same thing from Antonio.
Right, even though it's played by the same fucking dude.
just to take a step back, 2015 season one was the first
Grave Consequences
match, and then 2015 that was our match of the year.
Correct.
So now 3 years later, they're doing it again.
Yes,
and they're adding a new white boy in this, and it's two people got to go.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
You know, I said that I thought I had a match of the week. I'm not so sure now. I don't know if I want to make that 205 Live match my match of the week or if I want to make this match my match of the week. There was a lot of cool stuff in the match. I think the 205 Live was more innovative, but I think the Lucha match was a little bit more crazy. So fuck, man, I don't know. That's kind of why I need help, and I kind of hope that maybe our Facebook friends will help us out a little bit. Maybe you'll help me out a little bit. I don't know. But Oh, Porsche's on the thing about the whether or not there was a WWE multi-man casket match. He said the only thing that I could find is Triple H versus Midian and Viscera, who are the winners. Okay, good. Cool. Thank you. The match was fun. Jeremiah Crane getting eliminated the way he did made sense in the story. Ivelisse coming out with a fucking hammer, hitting him in the leg, hitting him in the arm, hitting him in the other arm, him flipping her the fuck off, and then her saying, "No, you don't get to have that finger anymore," and then whopping him in the head.
That finger is not going to smell like me ever again. Ever.
Whopping him in the head with the hammer. Like, in Lucha Underground, it's kind of like old Undertaker casket matches where they actually kind of did die, but then they figure out a way where they don't. Mm-hmm. You know, I would kind of buy it if we don't see Jeremiah Crane ever again. His ass got put into the casket, and then, what did you say, the entire cast of Coco came out and took him away?
If there is a flaw, I had this argument before a year back, or maybe it was earlier in the year. We had this discussion about an NXT TakeOver triple threat tag team match, and DIY was eliminated first. And that was the team that had the most heat. Gotcha. But I was a fan of it because I had never seen the revival against Authors AOP. Of Pain.
Yeah.
So a part of me was kind of bummed that we didn't get more Jeremiah versus Mill in this environment. Mm, okay. Because like I said, 2015, we already got it. And I didn't think they could top that.
Right.
Holy fuck, was I wrong.
Yeah, once it got down to Phoenix and Mill, it was like, okay, let's do this again. I think
before we go any further, that's the advantage that Lucha Underground has as far as picking a match of the week. Even if I did watch in its entirety, the third match between Buddy Murphy and Mustafa Ali, because there's 3 years of storyline built into this.
Good that point.
Everyone played off of, especially during the parts where it was Mill versus Phoenix.
Yeah.
And even they did things that even against each other I hadn't seen before. Mm-hmm. And again, we know we take Lucha Underground differently because it's campy. It's not a wrestling show. It's a drama that is actually has wrestling in it.
Yeah.
Like, and they make it that obvious.
Yeah.
And it was so fun to watch. And you stared at me react like a fucking YouTube video. I was like, oh, God damn, this was fun, dude.
Well,
this
let's not downplay the wrestling itself, because some of the moves that they were doing in that match, even before Jeremiah got eliminated, when it was Mill and Jeremiah down on like on the lower level, and then Phoenix just come flying off of the top of like the top of the building to crash down on
both on top of the ice box.
Yeah, on top of the ice box.
Dude, when fucking Mill was beaten on the ground, and then Jeremiah and Phoenix went up the stairs, and Jeremiah pile drove Phoenix on the top, and then Jeremiah's up there doing his pose, and then the freezer doors open and Mill's behind him. I was like, fuck, that's so SmackDown. That's so fucking like No Mercy from 64.
Yeah.
That was so much fucking
fun. It was
fun.
Theatrical. Yeah. You know, in a good way, like cinematic in a good way. Like, oh yeah, I'm kicking ass. And then, no, bitch. Like, oh God, he's about to die. Like that was such a great visual. And then, further on in the match, there was, other spots that were just crazy. I mean, I talk about like, the Buddy Murphy and Mustafa Ali Lee match. Oh man, there was just V-trigger after V-trigger. It looked like the five-star matches between Okada and Omega. Well, this match, it didn't look like any of that other stuff, but there were still like these high spots and wrestling moves that it's like, holy fuck, I can't believe they're doing this stuff. Cause yeah, there's story out the ass with this. You know, once Ivelisse got in there, eliminated Jeremiah, okay, that story is wrapped up in a bow. Okay, now the story is more about Katrina trying to be immortal by stealing the soul of Phoenix, who's in love.
Who can borrow a couple? He's got 1,000.
He has 1,000, but who is betrothed to Melissa Santos, who's the ring announcer, who's at ringside emoting and like trying to get the crowd, but she's just a ring announcer. She's supposed to be impartial,
but
she's not,
because she's fucking Phoenix.
Because she's fucking Phoenix.
Another thing popped up that I was thinking about during that match, when Melissa Santos in the locker room with Phoenix, And she said, and he's like, I got this, babe. I've got it. I'm the man of a thousand lives. And she said, and all of them are mine.
Yeah.
Is there something underlying there? Like maybe Melissa Santos is like Rey from The Last Jedi and she doesn't realize she's a Jedi?
Or maybe she's more like Melissa Santeria.
Yo! And that is why we continue to watch Lucha.
Explain to white folk what I meant by Santeria. It says Santos.
You do it.
Okay. Basically, Mexican witchcraft. So they could probably do like this thing where it's revealed later that, yeah, all your lives do belong to me because maybe she is undercover because she knows that Katrina can get all these powers, but she's into like all this witchcraft stuff that's like a different coven, and she's trying to seduce fucking Phoenix.
She's a Ra's al Ghul, like, and then she brings Phoenix back, but she fucks up this time, and Phoenix is all black, and he's like the Sting from WCW.
I don't know.
Oh my god, we just fantasy booked the next three seasons of Lucha. Yeah,
there could be so much more else there, just with that one little line.
That's my match of the week pick.
All right. the slam onto the casket looks sick. No. The blood that Phoenix was getting. Of course, we always see Phoenix getting blood with his mask.
We know what he looks like by now.
But when he did the catapult into the bottom of the turnbuckle, the exposed turnbuckle, that looks sick. So the wrestling is great. The storyline is great. The continuation of what can happen with the storyline is great. I imagine Jeremiah Cray's gone and dead. But what about Phoenix? Is Phoenix gone and dead? Is Phoenix now belong? Is his soul going to belong to Katrina? And now Katrina's not a ghost anymore? Or is there something else that we don't know about later on down the line with fucking Melissa Santos? I don't know. I'm sorry. One more thing. One thing that was like the cherry on top. Forget all the fucking Santeria bullshit that I was talking about. Forget about that. Just take it for face value for what we saw. Another thing that made it for me was the quiver in the voice of Melissa Santos. And here's your winner. Mil muertes. Like, she's like, I don't want to say this. I'm emotional. I'm fixing to cry. My baby is in a casket. But I got to do my job.
And
I loved that.
Here's where they got me. We spoke highly of Nigel McGuinness's commentary during the NXT main event.
Okay.
There was a line that Vampiro said. It's like, have you ever seen a dead man have fear? He just did. Because he mentioned the whole thing. You mentioned this before with Arnold. Like, this is a good season with episode one where you can watch from the beginning and not feel like you need to watch everything before because they're catching you up. They did a good job of reestablishing why Mil Muertes is who he is, what his values are. He might come across as a heel, but he has his convictions and he's sticking to them because he has a reason. And the fact where Phoenix was closing the casket on him and Mil Muertes said no, and Vampiro's reminding us, dude, this guy's just reliving his nightmares of being buried after the fucking earthquake and all. And then when he wakes up, all his family and friends are dead, and it's just him.
Yes.
And he just had that flashback. You could see it in his eyes when he's pushing Phoenix away from the door, gasket being closed. And then fucking Vampiro later on, like the Gaelic term of fucking of vampirism is
not cold up.
It's because it's for bad blood, and you literally have to kill the person for all that bad blood to be expunged and for them to be cleansed. Holy fuck, dude. Shit. I still want to go back. I'm saying right now, that's my match of the week pick.
Okay.
I will go back and rewatch this main event again.
For 205.
To make sure that this pick sticks. Because, dude, we had this last year. Cena versus AJ was a match of the year. And then the next year at the Royal Rumble, they did it again. You know, and they could have been on that list. I think they were on the list too. Dude, I'm not holding any cards against me to the chest, dude. I'm willing to put this in our match of the year list. It was that fun.
Okay.
You look at a match that we had 3 years ago, and it's like, you can't top this.
And then they did.
They did.
Jeremiah Crane did not feel like an afterthought, did not feel like a third wheel. But then once you did get rid of it, it was like, this is the rematch that surpassed the original.
Yeah.
So Portion live chat says, I concur. This is the match of the week. So she agrees. You agree. I was on the fence, but you may have convinced me, especially since I'm the character guy. Dude, you got me dead to rights on the fact that this is 3 years worth of story in this one match. Fuck. It's my match of the week pick. You got me. It's my match of the week pick. I can't argue that. As much as the cool flippy dippy was with jumping off of the steps, that's innovative, and I got to give you high props for that. But all right, match of the week. Boom. There you go. Three-way to the grave. Lucha Underground. That's our match of the week. Is that going to be our match of the year? Do we want to put our thumbs in the middle and try to vote on this? Yes or no? What mine is. Okay, fuck it. Why not? Put it on the list.
7 months, 7 matches.
Yeah. 7th month. Oh, 7 matches on our list. Fuck. God damn it. Porsche says, I'm down with match of the year pick as well. Three-way to the grave.
Jericho versus Omega from Wrestle Kingdom 12. Gargano versus...
I watched that earlier. this past week.
Gargano versus Almas from Philadelphia Takeover.
That's a good one.
Golden Lovers against the Young Bucks from Strong Style Evolve.
I still need to watch that.
Gargano versus Ciampa from Takeover New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Murphy versus Alexander for the Cruiserweight title that I still haven't seen. Omega versus Okada. 2 out of 3 falls, no time limit. And now our 7th match in the 7th month.
Holy shit.
Is Grave Consequence. No, Three-Way to the Grave.
Three-Way to the Grave.
Three-Way to the Grave with Jeremiah Crane, Mil Muertes, Phoenix.
Woo!
Fuck!
Man. We are going to have a busy New Year's.
Dude, if we have enough matches, we can actually do a tournament and just, like, knock them out during the month of December. We'll figure it out.
Oh, yeah, don't get me lying. Well, that means we're gonna have to have either 8 or 16.
As a matter,
I'm pretty sure we're gonna have 8. I don't know if we're gonna have 16.
As a matter of fact, there have been a lot of people when I posted the Murphy Alexander to Omega Okada. If there was one match, the fans would cut.
They would cut that one.
They would cut the Murphy versus Alexander match.
But people were also trying to throw other stuff onto there. You know, stuff from like New Japan and all that, like Cody versus Kenny. I think Aaron was fighting hard to put Cody versus Kenny on there. I just didn't see it. I don't think any of us saw it.
I was there, but even I didn't think it was the best. I felt like it was lacking a little bit.
Okay,
but fuck, it's on the list. I'm writing it right now.
Poof-ta. All right, so that's that. What else we got? Is that anything?
That's show, everything. Man. That's you want to tell them what's going on and what happened with DZW?
Oh, yeah. DZW, we crowned ourselves a new Lightning Division champion in Lights Out, KO Cox. So, yeah, he's our new champ. It's pretty cool for him. First time with him winning a title. So that's pretty awesome there, DZW, for him. Although it was kind of a bit of a teeny victory. It was in a no disqualification match against Luther Black, and Luther got jumped by Voodoo and Alistair, and KO just kind of got the pin just like after that. So I don't know exactly how I feel about that. Like, I'm supposed to feel good for him because he won a title, but he also kind of won it just in, you know, not the most honorable of ways. And then he's trying to strut around like, hey, I did this all by myself afterwards. If you saw the promo that was put up on Facebook, you watch that. He's trying to take credit for everything when he got it handed to him. So I don't know, man. David Dubron's very happy and proud of him, thinking that he's having more people on the dark side join him and having titles with KO Cox. But I don't know. Dave did wind up winning his third bench press. I think it was Texas State bench press competition earlier that day. So he didn't wrestle, but he did show up to gloat and stick it in my face. I was the ring announcer for the night, so yeah, he came out and interrupted me when I thought we were going to have another match, and asked for the microphone, said his piece, and then shoved the microphone back in my chest, and I think I still have a bruise. Thanks, Dave, you jerk.
Get it, baby.
Yeah. But we also have a new number one contender for David Duperron's title, and that is Romeo Falcon. So, Dave, you better watch out. Romeo's coming for you. So the 15th of July is the next show. So please come out, support that. That is on a Sunday, not Saturday, Sunday. So please come check it out if you can. I believe the start time is 4 o'clock.
That's next Sunday?
Not next Sunday, the following Sunday. Oh, next Sunday is the 7th. The following Sunday
is the 7th.
The 8th. The 8th. It's on the 15th.
So the 15th. That's actually Extreme Rules night.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Next week is our prediction show for Extreme Rules. Ooh,
interesting.
Yeah.
Porsche, what's the next DZ note? Or ROW? Check your phone,
damn it.
Oh, okay. She said check my
phone. Check your phone,
August,
damn it.
August 18th.
No.
What? Again. July 14th. Oh, the day before. So it's ROW, DZW, and Extreme Rules all on the same weekend.
Yeah.
There you go. Oh, Ivelisse versus Kiera Hogan, the ladies' night out 3 in a steel cage. Ivelisse versus Kiera Hogan. That's August 18th for ROW.
Interesting.
Yes. The last ladies' night out, ladies' night out 2, we had Ivelisse versus Kiera Hogan. That was a badass fucking match. It was really good. This time they're up in the ante, putting him in the cage. So yeah, you should check it out. So lots of interesting stuff going on. So please. Come support local independent wrestling. We very much appreciate you. I guess that's it. That's the show. Enjoy your 4th of July. Go see some fireworks if the rain clears out here enough. Don't turn around. Don't drown. Other than that, adios, my friends. Keep it classy. Not the end. Not the end. The beginning.